The Apostle Paul was present for the beginnings of Christianity. This is something that I hadn't really thought of terribly deeply until just recently. He was born in the same decade as Jesus, and his ministry began soon after Jesus' death. He was chosen by Christ to introduce Christianity to the Roman Empire, and he had to discern the path to Christianity for all those nations and cultures who were not Jewish. Jesus' ministry was to the Jewish population and was geographically restricted to the Palestine regions of Judea, if you can see on the map there, Galilee and Samaria. The risen Christ told his Jewish disciples to begin their ministry in Jerusalem among the Jews and the Jewish proselytes, then to be his witnesses specifically in Judea and Samaria, and then in a general statement to the end of the earth. I want to preface my discussion about Paul with the following suggestion. Everything belongs, and discernment is a lifetime journey. Paul's passion, his life experiences, his personality, and his gifts uniquely prepared him to take the Christian message to the Gentile world. Paul, as we know, was originally called Saul. Saul, like Jesus, was a Jew. But he was born in Tarsus, on top of the map there, the chief city and capital of the Roman province of Cilicia, on the major east-west trade route. Tarsus was a vibrant city of culture, politics, and philosophy, rivaling Athens. Paul's family belonged to the strictest Jewish school, the Pharisees. This allowed him later to access synagogues everywhere. Being a teacher, as the Pharisees were, was not a salaried profession. Saul earned his living as a tent maker, where he interacted with a wide range of people, not only Jews. As a Roman citizen, Saul received a classical Roman education and had access to special privileges throughout the Roman Empire. Saul was an unusually gifted and diligent student. He could read and write fluently in Greek and Hebrew, and had the ability to argue his point from Jewish scriptures and then to illustrate it from Greek literature. In fact, he knew the scriptures so well that it was suggested he'd swallowed them. In the Mosaic Covenant, in the Old Testament, God stipulated that Israel should keep herself for God alone, not worship other nations' gods. Israel's interpretation of that covenant was that God should be kept for Israel alone. The leaders of Israel in Jerusalem were dedicated to maintaining Israel's set-apartness to God. They believed that this warranted the use of force against fellow Jews, like the early followers of Jesus, who deemed to be threatening that holy set apartness. Young Saul was passionately dedicated to this view. You will remember that he was present when Stephen was stoned to death. The high priest sent Paul to Damascus to arrest Christian Jews found to be preaching the good news about Jesus and return them to Jerusalem. The conversion of Paul occurred on the road to Damascus within a few years of Jesus' death and resurrection. On our discernment journey, there is inevitably a breaking down and building up process, which occurs multiple times during our development. A recognition of the inadequacy or the error of what we have formerly understood to be true, a breaking down of what is obsolete. Paul receives information from a very trusted source, the risen Christ, informing him that what he passionately believed is not true. Paul is having a conversion experience, being turned around to see the world from a new perspective. At this moment, when he is nothing, he is in a fine position to receive everything from God. Christ reveals to Paul that he has been chosen to take the message of salvation through Jesus to the Gentiles. Paul begins to rebuild a new understanding of the world, which incorporates what he now knows and his new vocation of preaching the good news to the Gentiles. Both this breaking down process and the building up are the mercy of God. In the Bible, it says that Paul spent some years absent in Arabia after this experience. Was this a time for preparation for his new vocation? Paul was the ideal apostle for the new religion in the Greco-Roman world. In many ways, he remained the same. He was a zealot, fully and totally committed to the course to which he believed God called him. Saul, now named Paul, began his missionary life as an assistant to Barnabas in Antioch. He began listening to the wisdom and insights of other respected Christians, in company and sharing with others in knowledge that was greater than his own. After the death and resurrection of Jesus, his Jewish disciples Peter, James and John led the new Christian community based in Jerusalem. The Jewish attitude to Gentiles was that they were outside the law and the covenant, and therefore they were sinners. Many of the Jewish Christians at that time believed that Gentiles needed to Judaize. They could only become Christians if they first became Jews, which involved circumcision and obedience to the Mosaic law. Paul and Barnabas and other respected people argued against this, and the Jerusalem Christian leadership dropped the need for circumcision of non-Jewish believers and the strict adherence to Mosaic law, and they gave Paul and Barnabas their blessing to preach to the Gentiles. Paul was strategic in this mission. We have no letters from Paul's hand to non-city dwellers. Paul knew that the cities and the Roman roads that linked them were the keys to preaching and reaching the Mediterranean Crescent quickly for Christ. He selected certain centres in which he spent most of his time and to which he gave his personal attention: Antioch, which is down on the far right-hand side, Ephesus, Corinth, and right across to Rome. In approximately 51 AD, and these numbers are approximate, Paul travelled to Corinth and remained in Corinth for 18 months. He stayed with Aquila and Priscilla, and Paul earned money to live on through his trade of tent making, which was his custom. Corinth was the fourth city of the Roman Empire. It was the chief station on the way to Rome from the east. Augustus had made it a Roman capital, and the residence of the governor. It was a maritime city, it was economically wealthy, it was cosmopolitan and religiously diverse. Paul and Timothy and Silas began their ministry teaching Jews and proselytes in the synagogues. When the inevitable friction occurred with the Jewish synagogue leaders, they believers then met in private homes of some of the wealthier Christians nearby. The Corinthian congregation did not develop smoothly. Paul was called on to address issues that have recurred in other churches down the centuries that might be familiar when we hear them. The church in Corinth was a complex cross-section of urban society. Synagogue leaders, a city treasurer with a house to accommodate a whole church, Jews and Gentiles, a wide range of nationalities, cultures, and prior religions, and different socioeconomic levels of society who didn't normally interact socially. The phrase herding cats comes to mind. As followers of Jesus, our lives are about relationships, our relationship with God, our relationship with God's creation. Paul's letters to the Corinthians give us a clear picture of someone who cares deeply for his converts. Paul's letters were a direct correspondence with a church he had been responsible for beginning. They were part of a total communication effort, which also involved personal visits, sending of oral messages by Christian courier, and sending personal messages with the letters. Paul is prepared to go to some considerable trouble so that by some means he might continue to nurture relationships with people who are a good distance away. Corinthians 1 and 2 are part of that ongoing correspondence. The contents of these letters were determined by the state of affairs in the church. Through them, we know quite a lot about Paul's relationship with the church and his challenges. We must also remember that we're hearing only one half of a conversation. Paul wrote and received numerous letters from and about the church. 1 Corinthians is a problem-solving letter. Paul is ready to take charge. I will give one example only of the issues Paul was called to deal with. There's an interesting one about the Lord's Supper, but we won't go into that. It involves a lot of wine. And it couldn't happen here. After Paul left Corinth, other itinerant Christian teachers who passionately believed that Judaism was the only access to Christianity reached Corinth. To further their own argument, these teachers sought to discredit Paul. He was not a true apostle. He was not one of Jesus' chosen disciples. Paul's teaching did not agree with the other true apostles, like themselves. Paul's supporting himself financially demonstrated proof that he had no authority to demand support. They ridiculed Paul's personal appearance. They argued that the simplicity of his manner and his message indicated that he was not eloquent or learned. How would you feel? These opposing voices caused some in the church to withdraw support from Paul as the founder and the leader. It caused some to develop the idea of judging by personal preference rather than authority from God or the power of the truth. Unity in the church was broken, discipline was relaxed, and dissensions arose that threatened to divide the church into factions. As I said, this has happened down through history. The challenge of prayerful discernment is that it involves getting our own hurts, agendas, and egos out of the way. How did this criticism affect Paul? The hymn that we sang at the offering prayer, "Act justly, love tenderly, and humbly walk with God," was Paul's maxim. Paul argued that spirituality is about relationship, not about earning or achieving. The central point of Paul's gospel of justification by faith is that God's acceptance of any and every person is by his grace alone and through faith alone. God accepts all who believe and on no other condition, not ethnicity, not colour, not race, or class, or creed, or ability. The essential idea is that of subordination to Christ and unity in him. Paul's gospel is rooted in the life and teaching and death and resurrection of Jesus Christ and the scriptures of Israel. It introduces a faithful God to all and a suffering servant, Jesus, who inaugurates God's shalom, and a friend of mine who's Jewish, this is shalom, peace, harmony, wholeness, and prophetically promises God indwelling spirit to all. The miracle is that individuals and communities who believe such good news will be shaped in their minds, their bodies, thinking and living into God-like, Christ-like, spirit-enabled people. And the magic of this is that in some real, if imperfect ways, these individuals and communities will instantiate or become the message that they believe. And I think that is just such an exciting thing. Remember the imperfect part. The only people who grow in truth are those who are humble and honest, living fully accepting their own reality. Paul confirms in Corinthians 13, the foundation is always love. I like Paul's teaching that love is not a gift. It is rather the only proper way of exercising every gift. All that we need to do is be surrendered and have gratitude to God. Paul believed that evangelism involves the whole church, since the church, as the body of Christ in the world, represents to the world who Jesus is. Living the life of Christ does not in any way guarantee success, as success is typically measured by humans. And that might be an unpopular view sometimes in Christian communities. There is the very real possibility of pain and suffering. But living the life of Christ does increase the likelihood that those who both hear and see this embodiment of the gospel will have an encounter with the living God. We as individuals and community are called to strive to live as Christians, prayerfully searching for the best ways we can use our unique passions, gifts, and life experience to respond in love to God's call to serve him. May God grant us his vision.